Welcome to Eagle Eye.
What a break from Manoa.
Interviewing your favorite USA Eagles around the globe.
Tony Limbaugh into the 22.
Now, here's your host, Bill Baker.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Eagle Eye. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much again. Subscribe, like, leave a comment. And if you're listening to it on your favorite podcast player as well, same thing. Subscribe, like, leave a comment. I'd really appreciate it. So this episode today, I have someone whose Instagram handle is TouchdownGP. There's a good reason for that, because Greg Peterson grew up a big American football fan, even though he was born in Australia, lived in Australia. However, he was raised American by his American parents. So we have a really good conversation today about how he went from youth rugby in Australia, with Manly Marlins starring there, and just kind of lost out on maybe Australia a little bit, but then moved on to Europe and Leicester Tigers on from there to where he is now, Newcastle Falcons. So we really talk about that path, a decision that had to be made, his injuries, and now how he fits in really well with Newcastle. The guy's logging 80 minutes a game at lock. I'm surprised they have a backup for him. Anyway, real fun conversation. Enjoy it. Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Good, yourself?
I'm doing great. First of all, Greg, thanks again for joining me. I know we've been going back and forth. We communicated early in the year during the beginning of the COVID pandemic, but thanks. And how you doing right now?
Yeah, we're good. We're good. You know, it's. I don't think much has changed from when we last conversed. You know, like we were locked down then, and then we came out for about 2 months, and back into lockdown. So, life's. It's a bit sad, but life's like it's normal for us now. You know, we've got a routine. Home time's been great. The little one's just getting bigger and bigger, which has been awesome. And just watching her develop is great. But it's been quite good in a sense, because it's literally, you know, there's no distractions outside. It's literally straight to training, straight home, get a bit of food, come back. You know, it might be a bit boring in a sense, but I think it's helped me personally, but then also helped us with our season at Newcastle too. So it's been quite good, yeah.
Yeah, and you have that outlet of being able to play. I mean, there's so many people, even myself, you know, go through bouts of, I wouldn't say depression, but, you know, I got to get work out. You know, I got to get something going to get going. Yeah. So you have that going for you. But so off the pitch right now, it's really your full-time fatherhood, raising a kid.
Yeah, pretty much, mate. Yeah, pretty much. So the our little girl, Lucy, she's currently 18 months right now. So she's an absolute handful, running around, you know, speaking, communicating to a sense, you know, trying to figure out what she says without her getting frustrated. It's been quite fun. Yeah. But then we're expecting end of March too. So, you know, Tess is right at the end of it. So it's pretty much, it's either fatherhood or making sure she's taking care of herself to the extent too. So I've got two full-time jobs.
So the beard's looking good. Is it getting longer?
Yeah, it's getting a bit messy. I definitely do need to trim it up. It's, you know, all the barbers are closed here, and they've the club said, we've got a couple teammates that cut hair, and even the club said you can't do that anymore because they just want to reduce as much exposure as they can. So yeah, but it is what it is, mate. So I just get a little bit lost in this lockdown.
Yeah. So Greg, let's go back a bit. So growing up in Australia, born in Australia, lived in Australia, but when I was reading, you were kind of raised American.
So, you know, my dad's from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Mum's from Astoria in Oregon. So, you know, both of them very much in the north. Both of them met in Australia, funny enough, and, you know, had me and my sister. But it was pretty much a very much a normal American household. Like, the old man would wake me up, you know, either Monday mornings or Sunday, let me stay up Sunday nights to watch the football. Sunday mornings. I'm getting my times messed up. But
yeah,
we'd always watch the Green Bay Packers, which were our team, and then also try and get a Northwestern game if they're getting showed. But we did everything. We did 4th of July, Thanksgiving, all the American traditions and stuff. And then most 4th of July's, it was also the summer break in Australia. So we would leave come over, spend 2-3 weeks catching up with family. My grandpa had a boat and a cabin on the lake, so we'd get an RV and all the family would meet up there, and you know, just typical, just American summers, pretty much. And it was brilliant. So got a bit of a twang, but not nearly as much. But very much an American household. So you know, when I wanted to make the step, I was definitely 100% behind it. Yeah.
Was there American football in Australia growing up, or was that non-existent?
No, not really. We never really looked at it. I knew, you know, when I broke into the like professional rugby, I did see dribs and drabs of it. That, you know, a couple of universities were doing it, but there was nothing obviously to the same extent. It was usually just a ragtag of boys that, you know, love watching their Sunday football, and they thought they'd play every so often. I know my old man, when he moved over, he tried to play a bit, and I think it was something like he rocked up to the field for the first game, they had to get changed outside and it was rainy or something. And he's like, nah, screw this. And packed it in right after that. So, yeah.
So how does a kid in Australia, really any other nation outside the US, how did you get into rugby?
It pretty much started, we were down at a park, just the whole family together, and there was a jumping castle. And in order to go, I think I was like 4 or 5, so maybe even young, I think I was 4, to be able to get onto the jumping castle, you had to sign up for the local rugby team. So, you know, me begging and, you know, crying, kicking and screaming to get onto it, the old man signed me up, and it was pretty much since then. So I played for the North Pirates pretty much from under 4s all the way up to under 16s. For a long time, yeah. And that's pretty much, you know, where the love of it came. Played with school, you know, both Mossman Prep, my prep school, and then also my high school, which was Scots College. So, yeah, that was the catalyst, the jumping castle.
I was going to say, that's a jumpy house. Jumpy castle is what got you where you are now. Who would have thunk?
Yeah, exactly, mate.
Yeah, so who were you playing with at the time when you started getting into the radar for Australia for the U20s?
So really, I was part of the New South Wales Waratahs Pro Academy. Mm-hmm. So they had Academy, Pro Academy, and most of the Pro Academy players, you're essentially a full-time player, but they're just, you know, you weren't paid nearly as much. And it was very much you attended all the senior training sessions. And just learned and growed and tried to do that. So I was doing that. I did that for a couple of years, and that's kind of when I got selected. But also the main team I was playing for was the Manly Marlins. So because I was never selected for the senior team, whenever you're never selected, you get sent off to your club team and you just play from there. So first year out of school, instead of playing Colts, which is kind of up to under 20s, the New South Wales coach recommended that I give a go at grade because of my size at the time. He thought I could compete and it would mature me faster. And then, yeah, from there, just played grade, grew into it pretty quick, adapted as quick as I could. But, you know, still, there were a lot of older men, bigger bodies. And, you know, I credit to a lot of my development from that. And that's kind of not many people were playing grade. Well, there were a lot of boys playing Super Rugby in those times, but then, you know, from that step, it wasn't too bad. So that's when I got on the radar. Yeah.
So I know I've been following the Marlins a bit over the past few years because of James Hildebrand has been with them.
Yeah.
Their home matches seem so electrifying. The crowd is. I mean, it was that the same way when you were there?
Yeah. It's some of my fondest memories are still down at Manly Oval. The Manly Marlins Warringah Rats Derby is one of the biggest, and I can almost, you know, I compare that to, you know, USA Canada game to the same extent, except, you know, the fans, unfortunately there's 10 times more fans. Yeah, the field there is great because everyone's right on top of it. A lot of the people that it's a very club orientated and very local, so everyone does drip down from the surrounding areas because it's all houses and apartments right nearby. So everyone will come down and watch. And It's always the same time, same afternoon, and you get that tribalism, you know, with, you know, college and high school back in the States. And it's, yeah, it's absolutely mental. It's absolutely mental. Like, even thinking about it now, I still can't get over it. We don't have fans right now, but it's an incredible field, incredible team. And I always look back to those memories very fondly.
So with the U20 Australia, you end up participating in the Junior World Championship with them in 2011. Was that in Italy? Is that where that was?
I did 2010, which was in Argentina, and 2011. Yeah.
But unfortunately, that 2011, that was your first shoulder injury. How's that shoulder holding up right now?
Oh, it's good. Still in place. Still good. So yeah, that was the first one. That was just unfortunate. We knew something was grumbling in there because I'd spoke to the physios prior to that. A couple incidences were happening in games where it was just subluxing. And then just one game, it happened three times in one game, couldn't lift my shoulder afterwards, which was unfortunate. Got it back to a point where I could play the final match against France, I think it was. Yeah, the final match we had against France for the third place playoff. And it wasn't right. I knew I was running around like kind of arm in a sling and, you know, not trying to tackle it as nearly as much. I wanted to. The will was there, but just the mind, you know, protecting me. So, yeah, went back, got a shoulder reconstruction. That was the rest of my season. So then just packed up and got ready, just started focusing on the following season and trying to break into the Waratahs, yeah.
So mid-90s, I was playing for a club in Atlanta, and we were a week out away from traveling over to Scotland for a couple of weeks, and I separated my shoulder in a match. And the medic right there was able to just, you know, pop it back in, because why not? I came out of the match like 10 minutes later, but they were like, hey, you need to be out. You can't be playing for a while. I said, I'm going to Scotland. We're playing the Watsonians in a week and a half. I want to play in that match. So basically I'm running around protecting my left arm.
Yeah.
It's funny, though. And it's, you know, it's, was that the same shoulder you injured again with Glasgow?
No, that was the other shoulder. Oh, no, yeah, other shoulder. Yeah.
And that looked nasty. I mean, especially after with you on the gurney and everything else there. That was
really just unfortunate. I mean, so I did that one that year, and then I think a couple of years later I did my left. So that was the second time I did my left in Glasgow. Pretty much did it exactly the same way as the first time too. Went in, tried to slow the ball down a little bit, so to try and help the boys out defensively. And with the long levers, some guy just got the sweet spot, popped it out right at the bottom. The unfortunate, I couldn't. The reason it looked so gnarly was just they couldn't get it back in. And that was mainly because just my shoulder strength at the time was quite good and it was solid. Like I had no fears or anything at all, but the muscles were holding it in so tightly that the physios couldn't get it back in. So funny enough, and thankfully there was because of the size of the crowd, they had to have multiple doctors and ambulances around. They had an ER doctor working one of the ambulances, and he actually had, because for some reason, who knows, he actually had ketamine. That was the only way they're going to be able to get it in, because I refused to jump into the back of an ambulance with my arm because I couldn't drop my arm.
Oh, wow.
Refused, they're going to have to make up some apparatus to hold it in place. And I know the roads around Glasgow, they're not exactly bump free. I pretty much refused to go back to the hospital, and he gave me that. And that put me in such a relaxed state that I was able to slide it back in. So thankfully all that happened and I was able to go home that night. That was that story.
So I'm sorry. So going back to Australia now, you really were rising there as a rugby player. Mm-hmm. Would you end up captaining? You were the captain for North Harbour for a season?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's another step for you. Do you remember that specifically when that happened and what that meant for you for that season?
Yeah, that was an interesting time in my career. At that point in time, I really didn't have anything going into the following season. I didn't have, like, the Waratahs weren't overly keen because I hadn't progressed to where they wanted me. I had a couple other Super Rugby teams knocking at the door, but I just that they needed something more. And there was an opportunity for me to go down to the Vikings team in Canberra to, you know, to play for them during that first NRC. Unfortunately, due to rules and regulations, I couldn't go because bureaucrats. So thankfully, I was able to still play and still, you know, be with the North Harbour Rays. And that was brilliant. I was lucky enough to get to be their captain and lead them. That was different. I very much enjoyed it. We had a good bunch of boys. We definitely did struggle at times. We struggled to get the continuity together and really bind as a team, but we had some absolutely brilliantly talented players, and as we kept going, we kept doing really well. But unfortunately we just couldn't get over the line and couldn't get a couple wins, which was frustrating for me as a captain. We had a couple crazy calls, you know, a couple of the refs and stuff that, you know, didn't help us at all either. But I really enjoyed that group of boys, the coaching staff there, and, you know, the time I had with that. Yeah, that was really good.
So when did Leicester Tigers come into the picture, and how did that work out? How did that start up?
So like I said, like, there was really nothing on the cards. So I was open to anything. One point I was looking at France and stuff like that. And I had a UK agent call me out of the blue asking about my heritage. And he was like, "Oh, send me all your, you know, send me your passports and this and that. I can look it up for you." And I knew, Blake, like, I said to him, like, "I have no UK in me. Like, both my parents were from the States. There's no grandparents that are anywhere. I've met them all." So he ran the numbers anyway, and just by chance, and I'm thankful I did, I just asked, "Oh, what are the teams that are looking at me?" I think it was like Leeds, Leicester, and someone else, or they're looking for a lock. And thankfully enough, I knew Phil Blake, who was the defensive coach at the Leicester Tigers at the time. And pretty much maybe half an hour later, I sent him a text and said, "Look, can I give you a call?" Mm-hmm. Talked to him, and I said, "Look, heard you're looking for a second rower. You know, there's nothing really coming. Everything's dried up here. If you can get my name in the door, I'll happily come and join you guys for as long as you need me." So he got the all approval from Richard Cockrell. But then I just needed to, qualify for their visa, application, which was, you know, so many Super Rugby games, which I couldn't have hit. Yeah. And then, there was also, international, caps. So, I'd been talking to the USA. I met with Tristan Lewis 12 months prior in Chicago when I was there. Sat down with him just from my own knowledge what USA rugby was about and the 15s team and kind of what kind of setup it was, because I had no idea. And then pretty much I gave Mike Tolkien a call and said, "Look, if you're willing to have me, I'm willing to join you. I will be 100% committed to you guys. I'm hoping to work out this arrangement with the Leicester Tigers. Hopefully we can, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and we'll go from there." And I joined them after they played New Zealand. I joined them in Romania for the remainder of their November tour in 2014. Played in those three games and then, yeah, was able to join the Tigers. Mm.
So yeah, that it was about the same time. Okay. I was curious about that too. How you made it to the USA radar as well, but was there a specific time or moment where you said, "Okay, Australia's not going to happen." You know, or were you really, really worried about that at USA and anything, that you just wanted to play rugby professionally?
Yeah, I wanted to keep my career going. I knew, like, my agents back in Oz were telling me, like, "Oh, you might have to wait till after, you know, after the World Cup for a bit of a player exodus to get a shot." Mm. And I was sitting there, I was going, it was a bit daunting because I was like, "Right, well, I'll play Manly, do all that, then I'll have to get a job, this and that." So it was kind of staring at the end of the barrel. And, you know, like I said, thankfully I was able to pursue it in the UK. But yeah, I was staring at the end of it. I was going, "Shit, I'm either going to have to get a real job, and do this, or I can, you know, take a real big gamble," which I did. And, Yeah, I think it kind of really dawned on me when I was leaving to go join the US, just sitting in the airport, you know, ready to go flying to this backcountry, you know, country. Yeah. Just getting a taste of it, and just have loved it ever since. Yeah.
You know, professionally, so you're going to Europe, which has to be some kind of culture shock for you. And also you're on trial with Leicester to begin with, so safe to say you're not exactly raking in the cash, but you're living. Yeah. So was there any kind of transition period for you when you went over to Europe?
Thankfully, when I was there, I had a couple lifelines. So there was, so Jack Wetton, a good mate of mine now, he had also come to the club at the same time. Hmm. He was a same position as me. And he, so we both lived together, but then thankfully I had two mates that I'd pretty much grown up with my whole life. They were backpacking through the States and they just got to Europe. Mm-hmm. And with the contract arrangement with Leicester, they were paying all my accommodation and this and that. So I said, look, me and Jack are going to jump into a place. You two might need a place because they're going to hold out in the UK for winter until, you know, summer comes in Europe. So I said, come with us, you know, it definitely made my time in Leicester 10 times easier, a lot more familiarity, but yeah, definitely a huge culture shock. You know, I literally arrived end of November, so the cold setting in. I think my first real time I was like, shit, what have I got myself into, was when the Leicester training pitch was frozen over. You know, I didn't have anything warm, really. I had no warm jackets, no nothing suited for winter wear. And I think that's what I spent most of my first paycheck on. Our house was always cold because we didn't know how to bleed radiators. You know, there was a lot about it that was, you know, very rogue. A lot of times we were going to the local pub to get warm, have a pint and then walk home. Even the training sessions, you know, Leicester being very... very well known for how they approach the game, it suited the way I would play in Europe. I'd yet to discover that, but it definitely showed me a taste of what my playing style could be and how it could develop and grow while over in the UK. I think my first session, I got kicked in the head by Marcus Ayurza. Had about 12 stitches in my eye, so that put me down for about a week and a bit. But yeah, I mean, there were some grim times in Leicester, definitely. Not playing as much as I would have liked. Mm-hmm. But you know, it definitely prepped me. Like that was probably, you know, as much as it seems, the worst as it get, worse as it got. But it definitely prepared me for how things could be 10 times better. And you know, if you've been through the absolute lowest of the lows, it's only on the up and everything's easy after that.
So that was just what, 1 year with Leicester before you moved on to Glasgow?
Yeah, I think it was like 8 months or something like that. Yeah.
So were you not offered to return, or were you just wanted to move on at that point?
I was Cockle did want to keep me, but with the offer that Glasgow had and what he was going to offer me was just you know, too far for him to come apart, too far for him to meet in the middle. I was definitely keen to stay because, you know, Leicester's a very, you know, it's a great club, a lot of history. Yeah. The boys were great. But again, you got to put food on the table. I was really keen to get my, you know, my partner at the time and now my wife over to live with me. So I needed to be able to, you know, provide for us both for a certain time. And there was probably more opportunity up at Glasgow. They really liked what I was doing, how I was playing, what they had seen at least. And they're willing to take a gamble on me, yeah.
Doesn't Glasgow, did they have some American ownership? Wasn't there?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Or at least someone in the front office. Ownership. Yeah.
But yes, the CEO is Nathan Bombries. Yeah.
Right. And that had nothing to do with you coming over since you were USA qualified.
I'm sure there was some sort of easement, but
well, I mentioned that because there are a few other players. You know, Carlin Isles came over to try it, Temelau, you know, so and Lengi Lengi at one point, that kind of thing. So it just seemed to, I mean, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that, but you seem to be the one that was able to stick with that their style of play and get good playing time with them. Maybe not as much as you wanted, but still start matches, score some tries, be impactful for the team.
I absolutely love my time there. You know, under Gregor and Dan McFarlane, Matt Taylor, they were all really great to me. Again, like I said, like they were able to, especially Dan McFarlane, he was able to really get that Northern Hemisphere lock out of me, and really just got me to where I was today. Thankfully they rewarded me. You know, and I loved every second of it. You know, I was disappointed to always leave, but it's just the way it is sometimes.
And what's interesting there with the Scottish teams is that when you're not in use with the Warriors, you're playing with a Scottish Premiership team. And I was reading about they have a draft of all the players, so everything, you know, Hastings to you, whatever. I'm picturing in my mind a bunch of coaches sitting in a pub with pints, you know, kind of like fantasy football draft or something. Yeah. I want Greg Pedersen to put the name up there. What was that? It took me a while to understand. Well, I mean, it's great. You got playing time because that's what you want. You don't want people sitting on the shelf not playing. But you went from playing in a stadium with thousands of fans to grassroots, you know, parents and girlfriends watching you play, right?
Yeah.
What was it like playing in that Premiership side?
You know, it was definitely different. I'm not sure how the draft went, but I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have been far off that, I think. They were quite smart with that. Like Gregor definitely approached it differently to Dave Rennie. Gregor would use that, the BT Premiership, I think it was called, as a return to play. If you haven't played in a couple of weeks, go down there, get some match fitness. Because he was very good at rotation and, you know, getting the boys in when games suited them best, etc. And then Dave used it as ways to sharpen your skills more, you know, against less experienced players. You know, I jumped around to a different couple of teams. Yeah. You know, my first year I was at Ayr. They had a great side, great coaching staff. And I think they went on to win it a couple of times while I was living in Scotland. So played there. That was great fun. Went on to the Glasgow Hawks. I was able to use them to return to play for my shoulder. And then the third year I was there, I played for Mar, which is they had just come up from the competition below the BT Premiership. And they're very much just boys that were talented, but just loved the social aspects of rugby. You know, that year was a tough year for me because I wasn't getting picked much at all at Glasgow. I had a couple foreigner rules holding against me. So even if I could get picked, I wouldn't, just because the foreigner cap couldn't be exceeded. So that was a tough year for me mentally. But those boys, reminded me very much of Manly rugby, where it's just a good bunch of lads that, you know, played some good footy, but then, you know, enjoyed each other's company afterwards too. Of course, I couldn't enjoy their company as much as them, but, you know, I still hanged around, sat around, had a few beers after the game. Yeah. Mrs. drove me back up the road and, you know, we loved every second of it down there.
Were they mostly amateur other than?
Yeah. I think they might have got, you know, playing bonuses or win bonuses or something like that, you know, a couple hundred bucks. But no, it was all very much amateur, to the best of my knowledge, really. Yeah.
Oh, that's great for them too, to play alongside players like yourself, and maybe share a few stories over a pint after, you know.
It was good.
Yeah. So you're wrapped up at Glasgow. It sounds like your last year there, like you said, you weren't getting as much playing time as you'd like. Who came calling again? Was it Bordeaux came calling for you as a player?
Yes.
And were you under contract still with Glasgow? Were you trying to figure out what to do at that point?
So I was still under contract with Glasgow, and it dawned on me. So I just left and gone and played in the November the November tests in, 2018, I think it was.
18. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Well, I just finished playing for Ireland. Like, we just played Ireland and Dublin. You know, I was, again, playing good rugby, and I got back to Glasgow, and I thought, right, well, I should be, you know, I've done some good shifts here and, you know, hopefully showed enough to be able to continue that on at Glasgow. Unfortunately, that didn't pan out the way I wanted it to. I think the first week wasn't picked. They were going to give the other guy another start just for more continuity. And then the following week, they sent me back to the clubland. And at that point, I knew, right, well, doesn't matter what I do, really. I'm probably not going to get picked. So I had the longer picture in mind. I was like, right, well, I need to be playing as much footy, high level footy, as I can to be in the best shape I can for the World Cup. And sat down with my agent and went, look, you know, what's going about? And thankfully enough, right time, right place. Bordeaux needed a medical joker. Was able to line it up pretty quickly. And I think I was down in France from New Year's Eve, and spent 6 months with them, which was, again, another great experience, great learning, and a beautiful city, and I loved it.
Did your wife or girlfriend at the time join you as well?
Yes, so she came down. That's nice. I left her in Glasgow to pack up the house and get everything done that needed to, and then she eventually joined me down in Bordeaux. Yeah.
So it looks like this next step you took after Bordeaux with the Falcons has been a really good fit for you. You know, you're not only getting the playing time you've always wanted, but it seems like your growth over the years is starting to come together and really turn you into the player that you knew you could be with this team. Why is that? Why is it such a good fit for you and Newcastle?
I always knew deep down that if I got enough playing time and was able to get game after game after game after game and get that continuity I needed, I'd just keep improving. And that's just from back in Manly. I knew week in, week out playing, I could keep sharpening my skills. And just since then, like even I think it was my first year at Glasgow, I was able to do that again, but just injury just kept hindering me and I couldn't get that rolling that I needed. And I think they've been very trusting. When I got there, the premiership, when they're in the championship, I needed to kind of force my way in because we had some very good second rowers. Was able to get in there and I just held on to that jersey as hard as I could and did everything what the coaches wanted and just kept jumping through the hoops that they wanted. Thankfully, my style of play very much suits what the forwards coach and Dean Richards and Dave all want. If you said to me at the start of the premiership that I would have played, I don't even know how many games we played, five games and played all the 80 minutes, and then I would have been telling you, you're joking.
Well, that's the other thing. Do they even have a reserve lock on the bench right now? Because they don't really need to. You're playing every 80 minutes.
Yeah, they do. They definitely do. Because some
poor guy.
I feel like I'm going to get to the 80. I know I've been at that same position as the guys on the bench, and it's not fun right at the pine. And I think there was multiple times in that last game we had that I was looking to the bench, hoping to get taken off because my legs were gone. I think it's just the trust that they have in me to do the job, to do what they want. I'm just thankful. Yeah.
So as a team, you're 1 point ahead of AJ McGinty's Sale Sharks. So there's got to be some bragging rights here at the end of the season, right? Between you two, maybe.
he's always had it over me in the past couple of times in the past team. So hopefully I can get one over him.
Yeah. Right. But as a team now, so do you think playing that season in the championship is a good reason why you are playing so well right now? Because I know the roster's changed over the season, but it seems like that year together really has helped you propel into the premiership in the top four. Would you say that's accurate?
Definitely. It's very humbling playing down there because as much as people think, oh, it's easy, you're a professional team going against, the people that need more. And the way we saw it and the way it was, every game that you're playing is that opposite team's grand final. That's their biggest game of the season. They want to knock your head off. And they will throw everything at you. They'll make up trick plays. So to be on your toes for the entire game and to expect things that they have not shown in previous games does make it difficult. The depth of our roster definitely helped. We were able to trot out different players at different times. Everyone got a great shot and everyone was having a great season. I think it would have been, I think we would have probably gone undefeated, you know, that entire season. That would have been great. Unfortunately, got cut short. You know, so I think that definitely the place we were at the end of, you know, before lockdown and before the season got shut down was definitely great, and we were able to continue that on a little bit. But also I think the long preseason we had building into the premiership was great. A lot of boys, you know, we were furloughed for about 5-6 months or something like that. You know, we had no obligation really to train, to do anything. You could do whatever you want. But a lot of people did realize that we had to come in at some shape, you know, and a lot of boys did buy in because we had to, like, they opened the gym for us. They gave us weights to be able to take home. You know, they opened the gym, so boys were coming in their own time to do running and then gym sessions and stuff like that. And it definitely made those groups a lot tighter. And it's definitely helped us in terms of this season, because it's literally us. Nobody expected anything from us. And it's, you know, it's us against the rest of the premiership, making sure that they know we deserve to be up there just like any other team.
So for the USA, you qualify because of not just American parents, but grandfather as well. So did I read that he has a cap for USA rugby?
Yeah. So it's on my mother's side, her grandfather played, I always get this wrong, in one of the first games in the States. I honestly can't remember. I've got this little readout of what it exactly is, but yeah. You know, mum has a great portrait. It's the entire team. It's a little bit split up because obviously it's, you know, old cameras back in the day and great.
Yeah.
But she's always able to point it out. It's back home, and you know, it's funny that didn't come out. I didn't know that until, you know, a couple of years into playing for the US, she pulled it out and found it and then did some research. And yeah, that's, it was awesome. Absolutely mental. But yeah, there's a bit more heritage there. Yeah.
It must have been the old sweater days, the heavy wool jerseys or something.
Yeah. Yeah. They got the cord holding together the top of the jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. Yeah.
And the old fat leather rugby ball.
Yeah.
So when I was doing some research on you, one thing that hit me is I look at people's Instagram handles or Twitter handles, and yours, Touchdown GP. Why the touchdown?
Yeah. So it goes way back to when the Packers won their last Super Bowl. We were on tour. We had a preseason game down in Nowra with the Waratahs. And I think I was like 19. And the Packers had won the Super Bowl, and the day before the game. So everyone knew I was the American team, loved the Green Bay Packers. If football was on the TV at the headquarters, we were putting it on because, you know, I would watch as much as I can. And then that game, funny enough, like I think I got on for the last 10 minutes, and all that was ringing in my head was hold the width, because, you know, it stresses the defense a little bit more. And so I was out on the wing for some reason, of all people. And we're in the 22, advancing. And I knew I was open. You know, he just gave me a flat, clean ball across the chest of a couple of people and just strolled in for a try. And since then, all the boys went up and touchdown symbols. So I kind of just went from there. I just, you know, that's awesome. Most of the boys called me Touchdown Peterson. And that's kind of where that handle came from. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's funny. So looking back, Greg, are there some moments that still stick in your mind, even when you were a kid playing, and all the way up to maybe the 2018 victory against Scotland? You know, are there these moments that just you'll never forget about the game?
There's probably a lot of them. You know, there's plenty of moments. Probably one that I always remember was the first time that I lost to the Warringah Rats for Manly. You know, that stung a lot. I think I'd had like 5 or 6 games on the trot. We'd beat them. So, wow. That I definitely remember that, you know, that's the other side, the losing side. But then, yeah, definitely the Scotland game, all the World Cup games, probably more so the recent ones that we've had. I usually don't get nervous before games, but, man, I had something creeping up inside my stomach that I just wanted to get out. And, you know, that was great. Probably the Maori game that we had in Chicago.
Chicago, yeah.
That was big because I got released from Glasgow to go play that game quite late. Got there, and then my old man flew over and watched that game. And that was the first game he'd watched in person for about 3 years, 4 years, or wow. something like that. So that was just something really nice.
Too bad it wasn't better outcome, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's just there's so many of them. Thankfully, you know, bumping around from team to team, I have created a lot of memories. I've been very thankful for that. You know, as much probably when I was younger, I never wanted to be a journeyman. Never wanted to, you know, bounce around at clubs. I wanted to be at a one club man and, you know, play 120, 130, you know, go up to 200 games or something like that. Cause you just see them on the leaderboards right at the top. But I've loved bouncing around. I've met some amazing people, amazing coaches, learned a lot from that I still keep in touch with today. And a lot of people that I know that, you know, if I was in their neighborhood, I'd definitely give them a bell and catch up for a coffee or a beer or whatever it is. Just made a lot of great connections through my time.
Yeah. So what's the future look like for you? Before post rugby, you're about to turn 30 in March.
Yeah.
We share about the same. I'm a few days away from your birthday, so we'll celebrate together one day.
Yeah. Wonderful.
What's 2023 look like? You think you have another World Cup in you?
That's the rough plan. Rough plan. So obviously, you know, you get over the 30 hump and everything gets a little bit slower. I'm definitely feeling my body needs a little bit more TLC, especially this season. Things are just, I'm not so much getting slower. I just need to be mindful of what my body needs more. You know, I've probably equipped myself with a roller, a trig ball, and a massage gun and all that stuff this season because I definitely need it more. I've talked to my wife. The aim is definitely to shoot for the next World Cup. Now, whether that comes through or not, I don't know. We've got some great young locks coming through, and there's plenty of depth that's been created over the years by the coaches. So, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then you know I'm okay with that. But definitely hope to aim for that, push through with that, and then after that, kind of reevaluate. You know, I do very much want to get back to Oz, help the old man with his business as he's getting older. But, you know, you never know. The world of rugby, it can change on a dime. You know, big contracts can come through, or just a team that you've always loved and potentially play with. You know, I know Tim Swinson, who was a very good mate of mine up at Glasgow. He had literally retired a couple of days later, come out of retirement to play for the Saracens, even though he knew they were going down to the championship. But I remember talking to him in depth about it. He chose to go do that because of the respect he had for the coaching staff. And he knew them from a much younger age too. So he said the opportunity to work under them, work with them in some points in time, and the respect he had, you know, that's what he made him do it, even though, you know, his body's 10 times worse than mine. it made me think the same thing, you know, like if an opportunity like that arises, I'd love it, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So you already have a bachelor's degree. What was it, sports science?
Yeah, almost done.
Almost done. Well, so my suggestion here for your next step is immediately finish that up. And then go get your master's at Oxford so you can join Duro, Nick, maybe even Blaine Scully if his wife lets him. You know, maybe get a blue this spring. I don't know.
I've been very interested to see whether the planes open up and let him get over.
Yeah,
it's always crossed my mind with trying to study in that, and it's been quite annoying because doing most of my study back in Oz. Leaving abruptly, I've tried every year to get it started back up over here so I don't have that go to waste. But the first couple of years in Glasgow absolutely killed me, just international fees. I just couldn't afford to pay what they wanted. You know, I'm not sure where that will go and whether I'll pursue that career in sports science. I still definitely talk to every SNC I have and, you know, question them and, you know, also, you know, look up journal articles to see what's new and what's hot. But continue on that study. So it might not be, you know, some type of formal study, but I definitely do enjoy that facet of the game. that's applied to it. Yeah.
Well, Greg, I've had you for a little over a half of rugby. I know you're good for another 40 minutes probably, but that's all I got for you. I really appreciate you joining. You know, good luck the rest of the season with the Falcons, and I'm hoping to see you and the other boys in a USA jersey soon. Yeah. It's just, especially over here, it's been way too long, and I need my fix.
I know, mate. I'm the same, mate. It's been crazy. So hopefully something gets announced soon, and we can find out what's going in terms of, you know, the pathway, because I know the qualifiers are coming up soon, and hopefully we can get some games before that and really get a roll on and build towards what will be a big 2023. So, yeah.
All right, but I appreciate it. We'll be watching you on Peacock TV over here, which is another great thing about you playing in the Premiership. And then we're cheering for you, and good luck.
Thank you, Bill.